everyone. Welcome to I'm Kind of a Big Deal, a podcast about the unique lives of people with dwarfism. I'm your host, Christoph Zajac Denick, and on this episode, I am speaking with John Michael Ogletree. John Michael is 3'8" tall, and I met him when we were both featured musicians on a teaser for a TV show about a band made up of little people. He is a very driven, strong, and compassionate individual. We both, unknowingly, saw the same skeletal specialists growing up. On this episode, we compare some surgery stories, how his affinity for roller coasters supersedes his self-preservation, and how he has become the CFO of his company. Please enjoy my conversation with John Michael Ogletree. John Michael, thank you so much for being on I'm Kind of a Big Deal. It's so good to connect with you again and have you on the show.
It's great being here. Thank you for asking. I've enjoyed some of the prior episodes I've had the privilege of listening to, so it's exciting to add my two cents.
And it's just good to see you again. It's been so many years.
It's great seeing you as well, Christoph.
So let's just hop in and tell me, what is your dwarfism and how tall are you?
So my type is SED, spondyloepiphyseal dysplasia. So SED is, you know,
that's
what
not
it's
a real thing
referred as. I know it's not. I'm 3'8" tall, 44 inches, which is just barely tall enough to ride every single ride at Disney World except for Rock and Roller Coaster. And I think there's a few Disneyland rides that I'm not able to ride, but for the most part, that 44 inches is a big milestone.
The ones that are above 44 inches, do you have to be taller because the harness needs to secure you better?
Yes, I have a funny story about that. When the Harry Potter park opened at Universal Studios, I planned an entire trip to Universal just to ride that ride because I've loved the movies. I hate reading, so I've never read a Harry Potter book, but I love John Williams and the music that he did. And so I planned a trip. I get there to the ride, and it's like freaking 48 inches or some bull crap. So I wasn't even tall enough to ride it. And so I've visited a few times since, and I've had these like grand plans of adding shoe lifts or like wearing longer jeans just for that ride and just like stacking a bunch of things and standing and hoping they don't notice. But I've actually made it as far as on the ride.
Oh my God.
Harnessed in, just holding on for dear life. And, you know, the 16-year-old pushing the button to let it go, like, got a call from his superior who was like, yeah, you need to check whatever that was that just snuck on. So then they got me off and it was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
The Harry Potter ride, I'm so angry at. I will ride it though. And Warwick Davis has ridden it and he is my exact height. So he's in Harry Potter. He plays Professor Flitwick and some of the Goblin Bankers and some other characters. And so I don't understand that. Or at least it's my understanding he has ridden it. So
I feel like this is a great opportunity for Universal Studios and other theme parks to make a handicap accessible car that can be attached to their rides. I mean, think about how they would add a bunch of business if they had a secure car on their ride that would accommodate people of different disabilities. This is an amazing idea.
I 100% agree. And like, you know, let's just say, for example, I'm a 6-foot-tall guy. I ride it. I have some horrible accident and get my legs chopped off. So now I have no legs and my height goes from 6 feet to under 6 feet. You know, I'm still able, if somebody puts me in the ride and harnesses me in to hold on, like, yeah. I feel like I could still ride it. You know, the amount of legs that are dangling below me should not, like, qualify me to ride that.
Yeah. On a lot of these rides, it's probably torso height that gets you, right? That's the issue. And if they had a harness that went down lower, or maybe, you know, a seat that went higher, or maybe even a butt pad that could be applied to the seat to like lift people up and get those extra couple of inches for security.
Although the flip side of the story is, you know, a year later, I do sneak on and get thrown off the ride and to like my death. So I'm sure those, that height requirement is there for a reason. So I get compliance.
I feel like there's a waiver that you have to sign beforehand that says you promise you will not raise your hands in the air in extra enjoyment of the ride. But I feel like John Michael is going to do it anyway. He does not care. He's going
to
raise
his hands. I would sign the waiver just to ride that daggum ride. If it's the last thing I do on this earth, I'm going to ride it.
I love it, man. That's such a
weird
spirit.
Weird start to this podcast, but yeah, the Harry Potter ride in Universal.
It's kind of a weird podcast in general. I mean, I feel like this is a topic that is not talked about at all. And so I feel like we fall in the weird category, and I'm 100%
sure.
I'm 100% happy with that. That is all good. So before you were sneaking onto rides, what was your upbringing like? You're from Alabama, born and raised, always been in Alabama, right?
Yes. So I'm 35 years old. I was born in 84, and I'm the youngest of four children. So I've got two older brothers and an older sister. And I really do feel like as an LP, that makes a really big difference, like what birth order you were born in and whether or not you have siblings, because I feel like parenting is hard enough as it is. So the first child always gets the most coddling. If that happens to be somebody with special needs, I do feel like I benefited from being the fourth, because my parents said, well, we already knew how to raise three kids. Sure. So we just raised you the exact same way. Whereas if I had been the first, then they're pretty convinced I would have been coddled probably to the point where, you know, they wouldn't have let me do anything and would have really held me back, because I firmly believe adversity is like the fuel to my fire, and, you know, overcoming obstacles is what makes us who we are.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's really cool. My mom didn't know that I was going to be a dwarf before she was born. You're 6 years younger than I am, so was that the case with your mom? Do you know?
That was the case, exactly. Yeah, they were hoping that I would be a girl to even things out. Two girls, two guys. So the doctor was like, surprise, it's a boy, and he's got dwarfism. Because I was definitely smaller. I've heard some types of dwarfism are difficult to discern at birth, but I was noticeably smaller.
I think I was a huge baby, actually. I mean, not that I'm not that I'm not still a huge baby, but when I was born, I was a big baby.
In a literal sense, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. I think that's really interesting for your experience, because for parents who have no experience with kids, it's a literal crash course into how do we handle a new life and how do we handle this new, potentially extremely fragile life.
Absolutely. Roughly 1 in 100,000 births is my type of dwarfism.
Wow. Yeah, so very rare. What are the characteristics of your dwarfism?
We are a proportionally sized type, and I've back and neck curvatures and hip dysplasia.
Yep.
And another characteristic is, I guess, kind of a side effect or a whatever you want to call it, is early onset arthritis in the hips. And so I did not know that was a thing until my early 30s, about 3 years ago. I just, out of nowhere, my hips just started hurting. And
oh no.
It was kind of cool though to connect with other LPs with my type of dwarfism who are like, oh yeah, that's a thing. And then here's what it's going to be like in your 40s and your 50s and your 60s. And, you know, not that that's going to be 100% true, but it's Dwarfism's just one of those things there's just not that much knowledge about. And mm-hmm. so much of it is a case-by-case study, but it's interesting within the LP community, if you gather hundreds, if not thousands, together and study us, there are similarities. So I feel like that's kind of an opportunity for a doctor. I know Dr. Kopitz, back in the day, kind of had a monopoly on the LP side of medicine, and he passed away several years ago. Did you see Dr. Kopitz?
Yeah, he did my leg surgeries.
Nice.
When I was two, my family started to take me to see him.
Yeah, and I saw him until I was 16. And then he passed away shortly after that. But it's my understanding there's not really anybody who's taken his place. And kind of seems like geographically there's somebody with at least experience with a lot of patients with dwarfism, kind of strategically located around the country with various specializations. But I think they also see average size patients as well, just because, you know, you'd probably go out of business if your business was only catered to LPs, just because there's not many of us.
Right. Kopitz, he was the guy, and he was dedicated to only little people. And every time I went there, it was just a room full of completely different looking, unique individuals. It was amazing. And
absolutely. And from all over the world, too.
All
like
over
people
the world.
Would come yeah. outside the US, which was awesome to see.
So, did he do surgeries on you?
He did not. He recommended two surgeons in the Minneapolis area and the Twin Cities. One was a neck specialist and then one was a back specialist. So when I was 16, I had a double fusion of my back and neck.
What does a double fusion mean?
The double is referring to both the neck and the back. And okay. The fusion, it's kind of crazy. Taking the neck first, my neck vertebrae were aligned like a staircase, whereas they should be aligned like a ladder.
Right.
And
okay.
so they were actually able to go in with titanium screws and realign the vertebrae. And then, and the age of 16 is apparently a prime age because for the most part, I was done growing. And it's my understanding that this surgery cut my growth plates off. So they're like, this is the last time you will grow. And so they fused bone over all of the titanium hardware on my neck as well as my back. And my back, I had 88 degrees of scoliosis, which is intense. I mean, it is literally...
It's almost a right angle.
It's literally a right angle.
Yeah, that's...
Yes, it's crazy.
Mine was at about 34, 36 degrees, which they were worried about me. 88 is so... severe.
It's so intense.
This is so similar. I had spinal fusion at 17 at the Twin Cities Spine Center with Dr. Lonstein.
Yes, I had Dr. Lonstein as well.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing, these parallels. It's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah, Kopitz suggested him. But when they did my back, even at 34 and 36 degrees, they couldn't straighten it out 100% because you grow... You know, you're living with this curvature.
Sideways, kind of, yeah.
Do you know how much they were able to straighten your back out?
It was significant, and I've got x-rays to prove it. I've posted it on Instagram because I spoke about it at one of my concerts recently. So I had both scoliosis and kyphosis. Scoliosis was 88 degrees. Kyphosis was like 29 degrees or something. And kyphosis is just a curvature of the spine, not left and right, but like out and back. So it kind of makes my stomach pooch out, but my back goes along with it. So if my back is flat, then my stomach's flat on the ground. But if I'm standing, then my stomach is pooching out. So they were able to correct it. I mean, just unbelievably so. Like the 88 went to, gosh, I don't even know now. I think the 30s.
That's incredible.
And like the 29 went into the teens. It's unbelievable. And I didn't really experience pain from it because, you know, it's just, it is what it is when you're growing up. You don't know life another way, but there was a lot of bracing involved both before and after the surgery. And so after I got the back brace off, I just immediately noticed how much better I could breathe.
Wow.
The severity of my scoliosis, my life expectancy was about 25 because I would just keep growing. And once that 88 degrees went over 90, it was my understanding that I would essentially just start collapsing all of my organs. So it was really a necessity that I have that surgery.
That is so intense. That's so amazing. I mean,
oh yeah, it's very intense.
I can't believe that you weren't experiencing that much pain with an 88 degree curvature. I didn't necessarily have pain with my curvature at around 35 degrees, but I could feel this fatigue in my back and I could feel this instability or something like that that was just present.
And I can say the same for me. I definitely, fatigue is the best word.
Yeah, it just felt like your bones or your muscles just were tired or couldn't support what they needed to support. And it felt good to lie down, you know, when you've started to feel that way or after a long day. But I can't imagine almost a right angle, man. That is so intense.
It's intense. It certainly was. But the beauty of Dr. Cope is he was able to just look at my x-rays and just be able to say, okay, well, your neck is crooked, your back's crooked, your hips are crooked, your knees are crooked, your ankles are crooked. So if we correct your back and your neck, that will align you so you'll be okay the rest of your life.
I mean, what a genius.
It's like, what? Like, how? Exactly. How can you perceive that? And that surgery was in 2001. And I have not had a surgery since. And the next surgery on the docket will be hip replacement. And maybe, I mean, that's just my understanding from other SED types. Hopefully I can do that in my 50s and then be done with surgeries forever.
Wow. Well, it's good that you know what's coming anyway, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a heavy surgery, but it's not going to be a back surgery because a back surgery is so hard.
I missed an entire semester basically of 10th grade due to my back surgery.
Yeah.
Which was nuts. So I just worked ahead in some classes and one of my teachers even came to my house to tutor me.
Oh, nice.
Which was ridiculous. And logistically, that works great for a 16-year-old, but if I had to have that surgery now, that would be really tough because, you know, of work and care. I mean, you know, my parents were younger and, you know, my dad could just carry me everywhere because I didn't weigh very much. But now I weigh more and, you know, it'd be kind of awkward for my dad to be carrying around a 35-year-old man. But he could still do it, for sure.
He probably would do it if he needed to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I'm definitely glad that's behind me. I feel like my story in general is just unique. I think all of ours are. And you just got to know there's somebody out there, some kid who's about to face a similar surgery. And it'd be really cool to connect in some way with that kid, just saying, hey, you know, if you got any questions, yeah, you know, let me know. Even though I'm sure it's so different now and probably so much better. What year was your surgery?
My back surgery was 1997.
Okay.
And then I had leg surgeries 1986 and 1996.
Okay. And have you had anything since?
Nothing since, no.
Wow, yeah.
I don't have any pain.
That's awesome.
I know that other people are not as lucky as we are in that department. And yeah, I feel so fortunate for that. Dr. Lonstein was good. He did a good job.
Dr. Lonstein was amazing.
You are an incredible... Do you prefer pianist or piano player? Does it matter?
No, it doesn't really matter. I mean, more broadly musician. I don't know, but I really only play the piano well.
You are an incredible musician and piano player. We're going to get around to that in the next part. There's so many interesting facets that I've heard and researched a little bit about that. And so I'm so interested for that conversation. But talk us through going to work and starting at your company. How did you come to get a job out of school?
There's a lot of meat here for sure. And well, I mean, we're people, we're human beings also. So in a way, we go through what everybody else goes through, but then we also have to go through like a different layer as well. So Obviously, any college graduate, for the most part, is unnerved about what they're going to do for the rest of their life. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. Once I had kind of nailed down accounting, the CPA exam scared me to death, and I'm a terrible test taker. So I was like, nope, not going to do that. And at my college, we had a career fair. I put my resume in with two companies. One was Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alabama. The other was the IRS. So wow. I actually heard from the IRS first. And as a musician, as a pianist, I guess I do say pianist. So there's your answer from 5 minutes ago. It's just more concise than piano player. I figure the fewer syllables, the better.
There you go.
You know, I would get cash tips, and I had a really clear conscience when I was filing my taxes as an 18-year-old. Like, I was trying to get down to the dollar of how much I was tipped so that I could report that as income, because I was just one of those goody-goodies. And
not a normal musician. You know, so that's not a normal musician, people.
It's not a normal musician. So already I was like way over concerned about this. So I was like, if I get a job at the IRS, I hear they like audit you before they hire you. And that, like, what if they found out that, you know, I really made $100 more than I reported on my tax return? Like, am I going to go to jail? So like I started down that ridiculous path. But there's actually a way better story that you'll appreciate. I needed an internship to graduate. So when I was in graduate school, getting my master's in accounting, I got a call and he said, John Michael, this is special agent so-and-so. I actually remember his name. I'm just not going to say it, but he said, I'm interested in your resume. He said, we don't get a lot of applicants just because most people are going the public accounting road. And he said, just like off the bat, are you comfortable carrying a weapon? I was like,
whoa,
sure. You know, why not? Like, I was just thinking in the back of my mind, like, I guess if it was a tiny enough pistol and the trigger was easy to fire and I could figure it out.
Was your next question, how big is the weapon?
Right. I mean, I don't feel comfortable like behind a Gatling gun or a flamethrower or a shotgun. I mean, there's more weapons I'm not comfortable around than the few I would be. But so he quickly, though, started talking about this special agent team that he was recruiting for.
Oh, my gosh.
And it is a team of accountants, which is bizarre. So like when a company gets busted for fraud, this specialized team goes in and like apprehends the CEO and CFO and like swarms their desk and like retrieves files and like starts hacking into computers and stuff. Like it sounded super cool.
You're the guy for this.
Do you want me to go in like the air conditioning vent or something? And like with a spy camera? Like I didn't know what they were gonna ask me to do. And so I'm kind of getting excited. But then he mentions an obstacle course. And I'm like, okay, you're losing me. And he's like, how fast do you run the mile? And I'm like, is my scooter fully charged? Or am I on the electric one? Am I on the regular one? Like,
is it downhill or uphill?
Yeah, exactly. It became very apparent that he did not know I was a little person. And so at some point, I just had to stop him. And I was like, just so we're both on the same page, I am 3'8" tall, and I weigh 75 pounds. And there was just dead silence on the other end. And he's like, I'm going to have to call you back. I'm so sorry. And, like, he straight up just, like, abort, you know, he got out of that conversation. He did call me back sometime later. He was like, I'm so sorry. He said, I can't offer you this position. If you ever need a desk job with the IRS, please let me know. Like, I will hook you up. But that's an issue. So on my resume, I actually have www.jmopiano, not to like be conceited, like, oh, I've got a website, but like, hey, maybe do your research and click on the website and bam, like, oh, okay, this is not a normal person.
I feel like government agencies have access to so much information.
How could that not be in my file?
If you were calling a potential candidate for a special task force team to be carrying a gun, I mean, wouldn't you want to know the height and weight of that individual? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah, he had to have had access to that information. But all that to say, the IRS job did not pan out. But then shortly after that fiasco, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alabama called and they offered me an interview to come in. And I went in and got the internship. And then from my internship, I got a job at an entry-level accounting position within a certain department. And I am still with that company today, which is crazy.
Which is awesome.
I basically do the same job for them that I was going to be doing for the IRS.
Except do you carry a smaller weapon with that?
Yeah, people that don't pay their health insurance invoices, they send me in to collect. I wish that was my job. No, it's actually much different than that.
But I love your story with this. You grew up in Alabama, went to school down the street, and now you work in the same town?
Yeah, like down the street from down the street. Absolutely.
You've only been in this area, and you've only had one job.
Yeah, we're talking about a 10-mile square radius.
It's amazing.
It's bizarre.
You've only worked for one company. Tell us about how you've moved up in the company and what that's been like.
I guess it started when I was 23 or something. And like I've already mentioned, I was scared of the CPA exam because I'm a terrible test taker. And it took me 16 months to pass it, but I did. And then you get reimbursed the $5,000 that you spent upon passing. So there's like a monetary incentive to pass if you work for Blue Cross. So
oh, nice.
I kind of had that going and, you know, I just kind of wanted it. It was kind of a personal goal at that point. I remember calling my dad when I got my first paycheck. I was like, oh my goodness, like, this is so much money.
This is actually happening.
Like, what am I going to do with all of this? And he's like, well, you're going to spend it because life is very expensive. And he was right. But I had a great team of people that I was working for. And the guy that hired me, who was my boss, he's now the president of my company. I don't work directly for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alabama. I work for a federal government subsidiary of it. Mm-hmm. And so he is the president, and I'm now the CFO. And he was the former CFO. And so I owe so much to him.
Sure.
Because it just meant so much to me that he would give me a chance. You know, there's so much discrimination in the workforce.
Yep.
You know, as a little person, I just hear horror stories all the time of, you know, people being laughed at in interviews or people just not being taken seriously at all in any capacity. And so once again, kind of like bullying at school, I just have not experienced that, at least on my accounting side professionally. I have a little bit musically, but we can get into that a little bit later, but yeah. Career path wise, it took me 8 years to climb from staff accountant to CFO. And, you know, a lot of it is being at the right place at the right time. A lot of it is just working as hard as you possibly can. And there were just so many great people and great leaders that had a vision and they believed in me and they gave me a chance.
Yeah.
Every year that I had my performance review, I would ask for the opportunity to work on a project above my position.
Nice.
I would ask for something that a level three would do as a level two. And then when I was a level three, I would ask for something that a level four would do, just one project a year. And that gave me additional exposure and gave me an opportunity to demonstrate to the leadership that I was ready and I was hungry and I wanted it. And, you know, I certainly don't deserve to be where I am, but I'm so blessed with my job. I love it. And again, it's really the people is what makes it so great, because people can make a job so bad also. You know, you can be in the best job in the world, and if you have a terrible boss or terrible coworkers or terrible employees reporting to you, you're going to be out.
Yeah.
It's really got to be that perfect mix to be happy at your job. And, you know, as of right now, 12 years into this career, I'm just very blessed.
First of all, let me say you are being 100% modest when you say you don't deserve. You absolutely deserve to be where you are, because you did go about it the right way and you got in from the ground floor and you wanted it. You kept on wanting more and more and more and wanting to help. And it's not wanting more for yourself, but I know you, and I know that you are just giving of yourself in your situation and wanting to give forward and help people and help the company and things like that. So you 100% deserve that CFO title. But you mentioned about people with disability, people with dwarfism getting laughed out of interviews and not taken seriously. What do you think about that? You are a testament to a little person being an extremely smart and extremely able and extremely capable human being and a business person. Why would anybody think it's okay to laugh a little person out of an interview or not take them seriously?
You know, it is so sad just where we are today. People just need to be educated, first of all.
Right.
There's so much just ignorance out there, because, again, there's not many of us. And so it's rare that somebody would have even seen a little person in real life, much less talk to them, much less know them.
Yep.
You know, they're just watching movies where we sprout from trees and, you know, glow when there's more than one of us around. Like, you know, like we're like this mythical creature from the entertainment world.
Right.
And so we have that stigma about us that we definitely have to fight. Again, America's a great place to be because we have a voice and we can fight and we're free to do so many things. And if I feel like I'm wronged in a situation, you know, I'm not a litigious person at all, but I'm going to fight to make it right. And not for the sense of being right, but just for justice. But what's sad is there's so many people that don't have either the knowledge or the resources to pursue that.
Sure.
It just kind of is what it is right now. You know, I just hope change is coming. I definitely think shows like Little People, Big World, for example, that's been a huge positive influence for the LP community, I feel.
Yeah.
Because it just shows a normal family doing normal things.
Right.
And the mom and dad are a little person, and one child's a little person, and, you know, they're married, and they own a business. And so I think education's, just to go back to your question, I think education's the best route to take some practical steps. And
yeah.
I think even what you're doing with this podcast is huge. I think that's part of the solution.
Yeah.
And I feel like America is waking up to some of these injustices right now. Because regardless of where you stand politically, we all need to be loving one another and accepting one another. And for whatever reason, I can't really explain it, but I feel like disabled people are at literally the bottom of the totem pole in that list. We're still made fun of on the reg, and it's culturally acceptable.
Yep.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And even though there are protections in place for hiring and employment, I feel like those are sidestepped on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
They're really not taken seriously. Or I have a friend who applied for a job, didn't get hired, and they hired someone else who maybe was less capable, who was average height. My friend who went in was a little person, and she actually sued them and won a suit.
I bet she won some money.
She won some money. Yeah. And that's what it is. It's exposure and it's experience and education. Those three things, learning about people with disabilities and people with dwarfism specifically. Yeah, I think it's such an injustice and it's so difficult. And I know you love where you work and you love the people, but you've shared some stories with me about little bits of discrimination at your work.
Yeah.
You shared one story in particular where it wasn't even intentional and you actually received an immediate apology for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was at least one associate that I can remember who anytime she would see me, she would just pat me on the head. Like, because again, I'm 3'8" and she was 5' something. And so every instance of there being that height difference for her, it was a child. So like, I can understand it from her perspective, but like, obviously that's not okay. I'm so used to it though, because it's just rampant. I'd say I still get pat on the head on the reg. And I guess you don't have hair on top of your head, so that would be even weirder just to have like skin on skin contact being pat. But
it's happened, my friend. Trust me.
Oh, I'm sure. So at least my hair is some type of like buffer between their bare hand. But it was actually another employee who stuck up for me and was like, hey, that is not okay to do to John Michael. But again, it's such a rampant act. It almost didn't even faze me, which is crazy.
Was she doing it regularly? Or was it just maybe one or two isolated incidents?
There were only a few incidents that I could remember, but I didn't see this associate all that frequently either. So, I mean, it wasn't like a stop by my cube for your 9 o'clock pat of the day or anything like that, like, or else I'll get you. It wasn't that kind of situation.
Oh my God.
It was just very organic. And yeah, I don't know. But
she was hoping you'd come around for your 9 o'clock pat, but you never did. So it's very disappointing of you,
right,
John Michael.
But then like in a less obvious way, like none of the sinks and my building, I can reach none of them. I'm not the type of person that's like, all right, well, since I'm an employee, I demand that you spend $5,000 on a contractor for every single sink just so that I can reach it and I want it to look professional. Or I demand that you order 300 stools and have one stool there just for me. And so, I mean, I bought with a company credit card a stool for the one sink that I use most often. But, I mean, I'm used to not being able to reach sinks, and so I just carry Purell with me. And when all this coronavirus stuff hit, I mean, I had, like, a Y2K stockpile of it already, so I was pretty unaffected by the scarcity of the product. But
you were selling Purell to that guy in Tennessee who was selling Purell to like hoarding it for like all the
I was the supplier. Yeah. But there's stuff like that, that there's a few trains of thought, and there are definitely just people out there who are on the hunt for injustices.
Right.
And they're just gonna be that guy that's like, oh gosh, you know, I wonder what so-and-so is going to come up with next about, you know, and it's just very much a woe is me kind of attitude. And to me, I'm just like, well, that sucks. I'm going to figure out a way around it. And like, I'm already to the next thing.
Yeah.
Even though, and it normally takes somebody like a coworker, like, John Michael, why have you not gotten a stool for that?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I mean, it just wasn't a big deal to me, but I guess now that I have a company credit card, I will, because that would be nice.
Yeah. Well, I want to pose a question to you, and
sure.
I'm just interested to see what your reaction is, because it's interesting, your attitude. I know you don't feel like you want to rock the boat, but the more I've been talking with people and thinking about things, I want to ask you, do you feel like society is requiring us to overcome our dwarfism instead of accepting, like, if your company was mandated to put shorter sinks in, is that another element of drawing awareness to, oh, there are little people around? If there was a father and a son using a bathroom and the son was like, why is there such a short sink? And then the father has to explain, you know, this is just one for instance, but if you actually went through, and I'm not saying, you know, it has to be $100,000 renovate everything, but
right.
You're doing all of these accommodations. And before this, you were talking about how some of your joints are wearing out because you're using them more than you necessarily need to.
Right.
Why is it okay for society to require us to overcome who we are?
I kind of agree with you. I mean, they are requiring that. And in a way, I do feel like dwarfism is very much a sink or swim condition. There's people that just can't handle all of the extra facets required of us just to live a seemingly normal life. And it's unfortunate that those extra steps, that they exist. But to me, I almost feel like those extra steps have made me stronger. If there weren't extra steps, that I would be kind of more of a complacent person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying those things wouldn't be nice. Like, absolutely. I'd love to walk into my office bathroom and just... And at Disney World, another Disney reference, they have lower sinks.
Right.
There is one sink in every nice bathroom, and it's lower. And it's awesome to be able to do that. But, like, even in my own house, I'm not willing to shell the money out to lower a sink
right.
because of resale value.
Right.
Who's going to want a master bathroom sink, you know, that their dog can lap water out of, and then it would just cost money to retrofit it back. And I realized I could do that, but like buying $100 stool is just as good for me. And it's kind of cool to like look at that stool, and this is gonna sound weird, but like I, and you probably experience this too, but like I forget that I'm a little person
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Yeah,
because I have just come up with a way to navigate life to where all of the obstacles have been mitigated. I can get in my car and drive. I don't even think about the fact that there was a day when I couldn't reach the pedal or see over the steering wheel or be put in harm's way by the airbag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a high-driven person. I've always got 1,000 things going, and I'm always very forward-looking, so I feel like I have a problem in front of me, I solve it, and I'm moving on to the next problem.
Right.
Personality-wise is what I'm trying to say affects my answer, because there's a lot of people with very different personalities
right.
who are more present. Some of my best friends are the worst texters, because when you are with this person, you get 100% of them.
Right.
And they move through life at a much slower pace, which is probably healthier than my absurd schedule. But like, they're just very intentional about, they see a problem and they're going to take their time and, you know, get input, from every perspective and then sit and dwell on the best way to move forward. And I've already like taken care of 10 things.
Right.
Maybe not in the best way, but in a way that gets me from point A to point B. But that's not saying I'm not capable of slowing down and thinking differently, because for instance, this is a great topic. Like, it requires that of little people to slow down, get input from other people. But because, like I said, there's 200 different types of dwarfism. So even just accommodations for me might not accommodate for everybody.
Right.
Because there's some LPs, there's many that are wheelchair bound.
Right.
There's many that are shorter than me. So like,
even a lower sink though, I mean, if it's a little person in a wheelchair who has a family member who's also little and neither of them can reach a sink, like at least if there's one low sink, then like one of them can reach it and help the other one.
For sure. Absolutely.
Then there's that accessibility, but there's just these constant challenges and
they're there, they're real and they're everywhere.
And there hasn't been one little person, for the record, that I've spoken with who has said, poor me, poor us, I feel sorry for us. No one has ever said that. They're all like, no, don't help me. I'm going to get it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure it out. But when it comes to wearing out your joints, or, you know, not being able to wash your hands, or not being able to use a restroom, or being shunned out of opportunities, that needs to change. And I don't have an answer. The most I think that you and I came up with were education and, exposure and just having that input. It's just time and hopefully compassion and understanding. And that's really all we can hope for.
Well, and I do feel like things are trending in a positive way to shine light so that people who are different can take the time to pause and include us in their thinking.
Right. For sure.
I do feel like that's going to happen, but I also get the other side of the fence as a business person, why don't we install this just in case triplets stop by, coming up with accommodations for these obscure circumstances. Like,
wait, what? I want to know what we need for triplets. Explain to me what we need for triplets.
Exactly. I was trying to come up with some type of example.
This might be one of those situations where you do have to think more and inquire with other people before you answer this, solve this problem.
Right.
Okay, cool. So to wrap this up, I wanted to ask you some short answer questions. I thought about these and I thought that they were specific to us as little people and just how we see the world, and other people don't really have these experiences. They're little person specific. Actually, I have maybe a couple questions that aren't, but they're about your personality.
Okay.
Do you ask for help at the grocery store or do you get it yourself?
Ask for help. I hate it though. It's awful.
You hate asking for help?
Yes. But I do it.
Do you use a handicap placard or no?
Yes. I didn't for years, and I'm glad I switched.
Nice. What face do you make if someone tries to sneak a clandestine photo of you?
Oh, I try to make the scariest face in the world.
Like eyes bugging out and like showing your teeth?
Yeah, like I'm going to be under your bed tonight, so be sure to get a good picture. When you tell the authorities that you wake up with, stuff missing from your room. Like, this is the guy.
This is the guy. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Pedal extensions or hand controls for driving?
Pedal extensions. I feel like I would run off a cliff with hand controls. Yeah. I'm not coordinated enough.
Netflix or nightclub?
Netflix, although I do love a good Vegas nightclub.
Got that. Sounds good. Do you do your own alterations or do you have them done?
I have them done.
Yeah, me too.
My theory is if I'm not good at something, outsource it.
Yeah. How do you feel if someone squats down to speak to you eye to eye?
I get asked this all the time. I don't really mind. It kind of bothers me that other people are so concerned about it. Like, I prefer just to talk to you like normal, but if you want to squat down, I'm like, I'm not like disheartened or like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
I don't really care, but yeah, I mean, I'd probably prefer just a normal stance.
I was imagining you standing in a group of maybe 5 or 6 coworkers, and whenever they wanted to address you, one of them would drop down and squat and then talk directly to you. And then when they started talking to somebody else, they would stand back up. And then the next person that wanted to address you would drop back down and then stand back up. And I thought that was really funny.
That's incredible.
Really funny to think about. Okay, one last one. How about people who don't bend down to give you a hug? Is that awkward or not?
Oh, yeah, because it's like, you know, somebody's back is so huge and you're just feeling like awkward places and like bra straps and all sorts of weird things back there. It's like, my gosh, what all is back here on you tall people? I know, it's awkward.
Yeah.
But I do love hugs. I'm a physical touch person in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like hugs, but yeah, there's some bad hugs.
What would be a better hug?
And I guess it depends on like the environment. You know, I don't want some like intimate, overly chesty hug at work would be kind of awkward.
Right.
But yeah, if they kind of get down or like somehow there's steps nearby, that's always helpful. I'm like, wait a second, let me climb a few steps and do one for both of us.
This is a new purchase for your company. You need a hugging platform. So you walk up 3 steps.
Like and a hugging ladder.
A hugging ladder. Yeah, exactly. The hugging stairs.
Yes. Like, wait, Nancy, wait 1 second. Let me go to my office. I'll be right back.
This is not inappropriate at all. This is totally legit.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's definitely something I would do around the office.
Awesome. John Michael, thank you so much for being on. Appreciate your vulnerability and you sharing everything about your experience. And we're going to talk music. We're going to talk playing piano on the next episode.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Despite all the medical attention and his restricted ability, John Michael's attitude towards conquering the limitations that confront him on a daily basis is so impressive. Overcoming obstacles has really shaped him into the person he is today. He doesn't want to upset the flow of life for others. Though his life has certainly been interrupted. In fact, he almost welcomes the challenges. His demeanor is so calm and collected when he talks about the things he's been through and the potential challenges on the horizon. It's so apparent that he has some strong mental fortitude. In part 2, we talk about how he discovered his gift for music and how being a little person and a professional musician has been a unique journey. Yeah, John Michael is a CFO and a very gifted musician. That's a rarity. It's always great to receive your emails and comments. If you want to send us a message, you can write us at abigdealpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Big Deal Pod. Please rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm playing the drum beats again on this episode. I hope you dig them, and we'll catch you next time. Don't forget, life is short. Have fun. Hey there, amazing listener. I would like to mention that I'm Kind of a Big Deal now has a Patreon page. If you've been positively influenced by my show, or you know someone who could be, please share it with them. Word of mouth is huge. And if you feel inclined to be more involved and support I'm Kind of a Big Deal, please visit my page on Patreon, patreon.com/bigdealpod. The link is also in the show notes. Big thank you in advance.